So, today I'm going to be looking at one particular verse in Romans. So, it's the first in our series, It's a Generous Life, and we're going to be going through the book of Romans chapter 12 and looking at what Paul has to say about living life generously. And I've picked up literally one verse containing myself. Well, actually, I haven't contained myself to just one verse, but it's a focus of one verse, and we're going to dive in and see what treasures there are in store for us. Okay, but first of all, context. The book of Romans was written to the church in... Oh, you guys are so smart. Oh, seriously. No, it was written to the church in Rome in about AD 57 by Paul, also known as Saint Paul. For those of you with a more traditional background. Rome. I have had the pleasure of visiting Rome a few times. Now, the first time that I visited Rome, I was a 16-year-old boy on holiday with my parents. And at that time, we tended to do holidays a little bit blagged. So my parents were too posh to camp, but they were too poor to pay for hotels. So we tried to blag our way into different places. So the week before, my dad had managed to blag Linda McCartney's sister's house in the Tuscan Hills. So the standard had been set really high. So we're like, this is great. And my dad says, don't worry, I found a place for us in Rome. So we're on our way to Rome. Oh, great. Where's it going to be, Dad? Oh, just leave it with me. Don't need to ask questions. Anyway, so it's a bit late. It's like, I don't know, it's in the evening, like 9 or 10 o'clock, and we drive up to this kind of small little villa place out in the outskirts of Rome. It really didn't look like a place that people would be normally staying. So anyway, we knock on this big door, wooden door, and it's opened by a nun wearing a habit. Like, okay, she ushers us in, telling us to be quiet, and she ushers us down this corridor into a big lofty room with four camp beds. Mutters something in Italian, which probably was prayer and silence start at 5:30 and there will be no talking at breakfast or something like that, and closes the door. And we're in this nunnery, this convent, in a room with camp beds made up. So my sister and I were just like, all right, roll with it. So we just kind of collapsed because we had a busy day. And my mum just looks around and she's like, no, Roger, it's my dad's name, Roger, this won't do, we're not staying. And we're like, okay, we're going now. So literally grabbed our bags and just marched straight out of this nunnery, leaving this poor nun very confused, and went off driving to find a hotel in what I can only describe as the seediest part of town. It was just like one extreme to the other. I won't even tell you what was going on outside the hotel. Anyways, that was my first experience of Rome. And my dad asked me at the end, so, you know, what would you have preferred? You know, which one did you prefer, guys? And I said, Dad, to be honest, none of the above. Okay, all right. True story, except for the pun. Okay, so Paul was writing to the church in Rome. Now, Paul was writing to a church that he'd not yet visited. So most of the other letters, the epistles, Paul writes to church after he's visited. But Rome, he's very keen on the church in Rome hearing from him before his visit. So the church in Rome was a few different house churches, and it was a mix of Jews and Gentiles. So they had a real kind of, you know, multicultural, diverse makeup, and they had some challenges with that Paul wanted to speak into. So we find ourselves in Romans chapter 12, verse 1. So I've got the King James Version on the left and the NIV on the right. I will explain why I'm doing the King James Version in a moment. So, NIV. Therefore, I urge you, brothers and sisters, in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and pleasing to God. This is your true and proper worship. Now, let's be honest. This is one of those verses which I like to call eyes to the floor verse. Eyes to the floor. Oh, challenging verse. Oh, offer up my body as a living sacrifice. There are those verses in the Bible, there's quite a lot of them, where we just take a sharp intake of breath and go, that sounds pretty impossible. And this tended to be one of them. But I want to explain why it isn't, and actually why there's so much we can get out of this besides just a awkward feeling of inadequacy. I want to look at a few different words and their meanings. Therefore, you're thinking this is going to be a long sermon. Don't worry. I'm not going to do every single word. Therefore, right, therefore is an adverb. So then, therefore, consequently, as a result of. So it follows on from something else. So there's something else that goes before is Romans chapters 1 to 10, where basically Paul outlines why it is, what our motivation should be for living life as a sacrifice. So all the stuff that's happened before is essentially our because, our why, our therefore. Now, let me give you an illustration because I want to pick on something here that I think is very important. These are flowers. It is true that I buy Laura flowers. However, why do I buy Laura flowers? That is the important question. Let's look at some of the reasons. Because we had a row. Just being honest. Because Laura asked me to. She loves flowers. Sometimes she just says, buy me flowers. I like them. And sometimes she buys them for herself when I don't buy them. Because I wanted to express my love to her. Absolutely true. Because they were on offer. Let's face it. When you see a deal, sometimes you just gotta go for it, okay? There's nothing wrong with that. Oh gosh, some of you think there's something wrong with that. And quite simply because I've been a douche. Any other blokes out here who know that they've got to buy flowers sometimes when you've been a douche? Oh my word, I'm the only one. A douche. You've been an idiot. You've been lousy. You've been lame. You've been a douche. You've got to just make it up. So, an interesting study recently showed that the motivations behind couples' acts of generosity and sacrifice to each other are really, really important in how they feel about the relationship. So it's very easy to say, oh, it's always good to be sacrificially loving to your other partner, right? It sounds like a sensible thing to do. Always do it. Not necessarily. It's all about motives, right? You have two options for what your motivation can be for an act of generosity or sacrifice. An approach motive or an avoidance motive. So an approach motive is, I want to show Laura that I love her. I want her to feel close to me. I want to appreciate her for all the reasons that she's wonderful. Avoidance motives are the, I don't want to walk through the door and give a scowl. I'm worried I'm so far in the doghouse that I have to claw my way out. Any number of those things where you're essentially trying to avoid the consequence of something happening if you don't do that action. And again, we've all been there. And if any of you are in relationships, you've been there. Sometimes you've made the decision to do something because you want to avoid the pain, the judgment, the consequences, the cold shoulder, the silence. Laura's really good at not doing that, by the way. I just want to make this point. This is a general point now. General. Okay, so this psychological study followed, I can't remember, like 80 couples over a course of 3 months and tracked all the different acts of sacrifice that they were doing. And then they had to record how both the giver felt and how the recipient felt at the time. And then as a consequence later on, at a later period in the study. And basically what they found was the single determining factor for whether the couple, both partners, felt that the quality of the relationship was good and that the emotions, positive emotions in the relationship, were the motivation of the giver. Is that making sense? I actually have a study here. This is how nerdy it is. This is what it says in conclusion. Sacrifice, per se, does not help or harm relationships. But the goals, the motives, that people pursue when they give up their own interests can critically shape the quality of human bonds. Motives matter. Motives matter. If all I ever do is buy Laura flowers because I'm in the doghouse, because I'm trying to avoid something, it will affect the quality of our relationship. And so it is with our relationship with God. If we come to this verse thinking God wants me to sacrifice something and our motive, our thinking is avoidance, I want to avoid punishment, I want to avoid judgment, I want to avoid feeling bad about myself, I want to avoid judgment from the leaders of the church, whatever it is, ultimately the quality of our relationship with God will be diminished as a result. It isn't just about suck it up and do it no matter what. Sometimes it is, but if we consistently live like that, we'll get diminished quality of relationship. It's a fact. Psychologists tell us so. Okay, and what is this crowning thing? What is the therefore, the because, the why? Why should we be living putting ourselves into the place of being a living sacrifice? It's all about mercy. It's all about mercy. And this is a very interesting choice of words. Paul could have said it's all about love, in view of God's love, in view of God's grace. But he chose the word mercy, or mercies, actually, in view of God's mercies. And here's the reality. Mercy is really important. We don't talk about it as much as love and grace, but we need mercy. We desperately need mercy. Do you know why? Because we deserve punishment. I know that's not a word you're probably used to hearing too much up front or in any context, but this is the reality. There is a deep spiritual and moral law of the universe that recognizes that actually something has to happen as a result of our wrongdoing. There has to be some point where it can't just be ignored. It can't just be swept under the carpet. Now, for the readers of Rome, they would have understood what that was. What was that thing? What was that punishment or that thing? And that they called the law. So they would have understood that the law of God as put in the Old Testament, was the thing, if you like. But that was for Jews. What about for Gentiles? So for Gentiles, the ones that didn't have all that context, well, in the church in Rome, they kind of thought they were sort of free to just do kind of what they wanted because the law applied to the Jews. Here's what Paul writes. Indeed, when Gentiles who do not have the law do by nature things required by the law, they are a law for themselves, even though they do not have the law, as in they have their own law. They live under their own law. They show that the requirements of the law are written on their hearts. Their consciences also bear witness, and their thoughts sometimes accusing them, and at other times even defending them. This shows that the law is universal. The law is universal. It applies whoever you are, whether you're Jew or you're Gentile. And actually, the law hasn't disappeared. So I know as Christians, we're very keen to say, yes, but the law, there is no law. We don't live under law. And that's true. We don't live under law, but the law still exists. Do you get me? So even Jesus said it himself, I haven't come to abolish the law. I've just come to fulfill it and everything that means. So the law is still out there. Call it righting wrongs. Call it yin and yang. In one sense, it doesn't matter. It is there. It's a reality. It's a reality for all people, whether you're a Christian, not a Christian, whether you've been part of church your whole life, or you've never stepped in the door of one. It is a spiritual reality. But here's the good news. Here's the good news. Jesus releases us from the law. That's the mercy. Jesus releases us from the law. He's taken all the things we've done wrong, and he shut the door of the law behind us. He shut it. So actually, it doesn't apply to us anymore. It can't get to us. And it's our chance to arrive at the end of our lives debt-free. Debt-free. I don't have anything to pay back because Jesus has paid it. Paul puts it best. He says, there is now no condemnation for those who are in Christ Jesus, because through Christ, the law of the Spirit who gives life has set you free from the law of sin and death. It's one of those verses that gets quoted a lot, but I think that its importance has really struck me as I've prepared for this talk. There's no condemnation. There's no condemnation. Well, what does that mean? We're free from condemnation. Number one, we're free from condemnation by God. God himself does not judge us. All he does is he sees this paid by Jesus stamp and goes, cool, covered. Doesn't matter what you did. Doesn't matter when you did it. Doesn't matter if you keep doing it over and over again. It's covered. It's paid. Stamp. Jesus paid it. Awesome. No condemnation. And second of all, we're free from condemnation by ourselves. It's true that we're often our harshest judge, aren't we? We're often our harshest critic. And I know that's for me. Actually, I can look at myself and what I've done and say, I'm free from condemnation. I'm free from condemning myself. I had a not great day the other day at the office. I didn't respond very well to a colleague and a couple of things I did. You probably know that feeling where you drive home at the end of the day and you just think, I haven't really covered myself in glory today, have I? Was the actual words that I thought, and then I stopped to get petrol on my bike and I realized, but I have covered myself in glory today because Jesus covered me in glory. As in, not that it doesn't matter what I did, but actually that point of I haven't covered myself in glory, God looks at me and sees glory because he sees Jesus. And it frees, it's not just freeing from what God sees, it frees me to see myself differently. And I think this is really important when we come to this verse and wrestling with this idea of being a living sacrifice. Oh, that's me covering myself in glory on a mountain. Okay, oh, we're going to have time for this. Is there a groan for Greek? Oh, outrageous. Right, we're going to do this because of you two. Okay, can anyone see a little sign in front of their seats that says mercy? Pick it up, pull it off, grab it. If it's near you, grab it and be quick about it. Don't dilly-dally. Right. Mercy, mercy, mercy. Oiktirmos. Okay. You have no choice. You have to stand up and read out. So this is one of the definitions of mercy as from the Greek, octumos. Okay, manifestations of pity. Okay, that's interesting. So there's a pity element to this word. Anyone else? Emotions, longings. Okay, this mercy is part of an emotional thing, longings. Yeah. Oh, I like that. Bowels in which compassion resides. A heart of compassion. Great, brilliant. So you get a bit of a sense of what this word means. Paul's writing about something that's not just abstract mercy, but it's deep bowels of compassion, pity. These are the things that should be our why. Our why do we want to live this life of sacrifice? Now, living sacrifice, it sounds like a bit of an oxymoron, doesn't it? As in, if something gets sacrificed, it's dead, right? So Paul introduces this concept, or puts these two words together for the first time in the Bible. So what would the readers have kind of understood from this living sacrifice? Okay, a little bit of context. So sacrifice, very important in the Jewish culture, very important in the Jewish belief systems. Basically, there are two types of sacrifice. One is a mandatory sacrifice that you offer to God as an atonement for sin. And the other one is a voluntary sacrifice, which you offer as basically a sign of dedication, of devotion, of love to God. Two different types of sacrifices. Having read chapters 1 to 10, as it were, the Roman church in Rome would have been really clear that Jesus was the mandatory sacrifice, yeah? So Jesus was the one who is now the sacrifice to cover all the sins ever. So they don't need to worry about mandatory sacrifice anymore. Paul's made that clear. But then he brings in this living sacrifice. So immediately they would have been reading that thinking, ah, this is it. We were wondering what the voluntary sacrifice, principle still stood. Now we know what it is. Basically, Paul's saying the voluntary sacrifice is no longer an unblemished goat or lamb or sheep or dove or whatever you could get hold of. It's now you. But you get to live. Yay! You are the voluntary sacrifice. A voluntary sacrifice given as a sign, as an act of devotion, commitment, dedication to God. It's you, but alive. So this would have been cool. This would have been good news. It's got to be good news. It must have been hard, always having to find perfect animals, slaughter them in the mess, the blood runs everywhere, it just probably smells, the burning. Anyway, I'm sure this was good news. I'm sure of it. So basically, what does that mean for us, okay? For us, it means our daily, ongoing, micro-sacrifices are the new voluntary offering. This is how we show our love and our devotion to God. So it's not a vicarious thing. It's not a thing that we pass off now to spotless animal. It's not a thing we pass off to the leader of the church, whatever. It is now us, very direct, us putting our bodies, as in all of ourselves, on the line for God. It follows on from Jesus talking about laying down about denying yourself, picking up your cross, following me. And Paul spells that out too. So I don't think it would have been entirely new for their readers, but it would have been put in a way that they really grab it. They really grab it. Poetry. There we are. Okay. What's this? No. This is the most important bit of my whole talk. If you don't remember anything else, remember this. Maybe the hokey cokey is really what it's all about. Oh, yes. Some of you, the penny's dropping. So you put your left leg in. I don't even know the order. You put your right leg in. You put all these different bits in. Then what do? You put your whole self in. I don't even know how you meant to do it, but that's my version of it. You put your whole self in. And that's kind of what Paul is saying here. You put your whole self in. Offer your bodies as a living sacrifice. Come on, guys, put your whole self in. Now, the truth is, I fall well short of putting my whole self in on a whole number of reasons. And I do it quite regularly. But that's only one truth. Let me tell you another really important truth that's in play. And actually, it ties into what quite a few of you have been saying from the front, some of the words have been given. This is Peter. You, like living stones, are being built into a spiritual house to offer spiritual sacrifices acceptable and pleasing to God through Jesus Christ. Right, I don't know if you're like me. Here's where I struggle. I go, great, I've got to put my whole self in. I've got to offer myself as a living sacrifice. Cool, great, let's do it. Oh, no, I've fallen short. I feel really rubbish about myself. I'm judging myself. I'm measuring myself. Aren't I really rubbish? I've got Andy and Val here. They do like living sacrifice. I'm so rubbish. Lame. Aren't I lame? Out of 10, how would I rate my living sacrifice? 3, maybe 2.5. But here's the really important truth. The sacrifice is acceptable and pleasing to God, not because of what I've done. It's acceptable and pleasing to God through Jesus. So when God looks at our efforts, however menial they may be, at sacrifice, he goes, I love it. They're acceptable. They're pleasing. They're sweet smelling because I see Jesus. I smell Jesus. You've got the aroma of Jesus on you. And do you know what that does? That frees us up to give it a go. It frees us up to give it a go. Otherwise, we look at that verse and go, well, I can't do it. I can't be this constant living sacrifice, giving all of myself. But actually, once we know that we're not being judged on it as a performance, when God says it is acceptable and pleasing because you've accepted Jesus into your life, and I see him and I smell him, the sacrifice, it frees us up to give it a go and give it a best shot. And I think that is pretty amazing. I think that frees us up from so much of the stuff that I know for me as a Christian, I struggle with up here, which is comparison, evaluation, judgment, feeling like I've fallen short. But, and that would, I'd feel like that if Peter didn't add pleasing to God through Jesus Christ. It's quite an intentional bit that he added there. That's why it's pleasing. Whatever you do, whatever your act of sacrifice is, it's pleasing to God because of that. Right. I'm going to skip that bit. Cards. Welcome team. I need the cards. Thank you. So what I'd like you all to do is I'd like you to personalize this verse. So the welcome team are going to hand out cards to each of you. And I'd like you to take a look at this verse and rewrite it. So we're using a tool at the moment, or we're using part of a tool called Nourish. I don't know if some of you have heard of it. So Nourish is it's basically a methodology or a tool of studying the Bible and getting a bit underneath the skin of it, looking at the Greek, looking at the context, looking at the different ways of understanding it. And one of the things that you do as part of a Nourish Bible study is you rewrite the passage at the end. So just while the music plays, what I want to encourage you to do is just allow God to speak to you and just show you what is God saying to you in this verse right now. The NIV, the KJV, whatever, may feel a bit limited, but now actually that you've understood some of that context, rewrite the verse in your own words and allow God to speak to you. What is he saying? Feel free to keep writing if you're finishing, or even to take it home and ponder it. Just want to leave you with one last thought, which involves this androgynous being, lovingly drawn by my wife. I want to just make this a little more practical. I want to challenge you to think about or open yourself to God saying to you, what's next? What's next in the hokey cokey? Okay, so God wants you to put your whole self in. But usually, as with the song, it starts by putting something in that isn't in now. So what is it God is asking you to put in now? Is it your hands? Is it actually serving him in some way that you aren't at the moment? Is it your feet? Is it about going? Is it about going to places, going to people that you aren't going to at the moment? Is it about your ears? Is it about listening to God, hearing his voice, hearing him speak to you through his word? Is it about your eyes, being open to seeing what's going on around you, what other people need, how you can respond, the heavenly donuts type thing? Is it your brain? Actually, is it your thoughts? You know, your thought life just isn't what you know God deserves. So we're going to close now. That's kind of a closing thought I just want to leave you with and encourage you to think about. And I want to encourage you to know, yes, God says, put your whole self in because I've been so amazingly merciful and loving to you. But he also says, whatever you do is going to be pleasing and acceptable because you've accepted Jesus.